Before I start today's Dhamma talk, I'd like to remind you, after the retreat, it's not the end of your meditation. When you go back home, try to practice at least 1.5 hours a day. At least 1.5 hours a day. Constant practice is very important to make progress. If you do not practice at home and only wait for retreat, then you cannot make good progress in the retreat. So try to make a habit to practice at least 1.5 hours a day, especially early in the morning. Which early in the morning, after a good sleep, good rest, your mind is quiet, peaceful. Especially early in the morning, the mind is not so active. It's very good for anapanasati. To practice mindfulness of breathing, your mind cannot be too active. Too active, it becomes restless. Your mind must be quiet, little bit weak, then very easy you can concentrate on the breath. So early morning is the best time to practice mindfulness of breathing. And sit 1.5 hours. Train yourself to sit 1.5 hours. 1 hour is not enough for concentration. And I feel very happy here because I see many people making good progress. Although only we only have 2 days retreat. Quite a lot of people coming to report. They see the light. So okay, so today is Meghiya Sutta. Meghiya. So the sutta starts, once the Blessed One lived at Chalika. There, the Venerable Meghiya, who was at that time the Blessed One's attendant, Kapiya, attendant, who served the Lord Buddha. You may ask, why not Ananda? Ananda is Buddha's attendant for almost 20 years. Before Ananda, before Venerable Ananda, Buddha has no permanent Kapiya, has no permanent attendance, always changing. So at that time, Meghiya was the Blessed One's attendant, and he approached the Master, saluted him respectfully, and was standing at one side, said, "Lord, I wish to go to Chandugama for alms food." Then the Lord Buddha said, "You may do as you think fit, Meghiya." Then the Venerable Meghiya, dressing himself in the morning and taking rope and bow, I repeat again. I forgot to press my record. Okay. So today's talk is on Meghiya Sutta. Meghiya, who was at that time Buddha's attendant. At that time, the Blessed One lived at Chalika. And the Meghiya approached the Master after saluted him respectfully and said, "Lord, I wish to go to Chandugama for alms food." Then the Blessed One said, "You may do as you think fit, Meghiya." The Venerable Meghiya, dressing himself in the morning and taking rope and bow, entered Chandugama for alms food. Having made the alms round, So having made the arms round and taken his meal, he went to the bank of the Kimkala River. There, while walking about to stretch his legs, he saw a pleasant and beautiful mango grove. Seeing it, he thought, "Pleasant indeed is this mango grove. It is beautiful. Truly, it is fit for a clansman who wishes to make effort in meditation. If the Blessed One allows it, I shall return to this mango grove for my efforts." And the Venerable Meghiya went to see the Blessed One and asked permission to go to this mango grove for his own meditation. But the Blessed One said, "Wait for a while. Wait for a while, Meghiya. We are now alone here. First, let another monk come." But the Venerable Meghiya repeated his request, saying, "Lord, for the Blessed One, there is nothing further to achieve, and nothing need to be added to his achievement. But as for me, O Lord, there is still more that I have to achieve and more to be added to what I have done. If the Blessed One permits, I shall go to that mango grove and strive." Again, the Blessed One asked him to wait, and again the Venerable Meghiya made his request for a third time. I think Venerable Meghiya is very disrespectful. Even the Lord Buddha asked him to wait. Now nobody serve me. Wait for a while. Wait until somebody come. He never listened to the master's word. When Buddha says something, he must have his own reason. You know, because he can foresee. He has psychic power. He can see what will happen in the future. But this Meghiya is very disrespect, very disrespect. And he didn't follow the teacher's word. It's very important to be a student. You must be obedient. That's very important, especially obedient to the instruction. Listen closely, follow the instruction closely, then you make good progress. If you cling, or you cling to your own view, and you never follow teacher's instruction, then after some time, the teacher give up. Give up. No, I don't want to teach you anymore. Okay. Then the Buddha say, "As you speak of striving, Meghiya, what can we say? You may do now as you think fit." Then the Venerable Meghiya rose from his seat, saluted the Blessed One, then he went deeper into the grove, mango grove, and sat down under a tree to spend the day there. But while staying in that mango grove, the three evil, unwholesome thoughts constantly assailed him. What are the three evil thoughts? One, sensual thoughts. Two, thoughts of aversion, and three, the thought of violence. These three thoughts constantly attack his mind. Then Meghiya thought, "Truly, it is very strange, it is amazing. In faith have I gone forth from home into the homeless life, and yet I am harassed by these three evil unwholesome thoughts." Thoughts of censure, thought of aversion, and thought of violence. Then the Venerable Meghiya betook himself to the Blessed One, and having saluted him, he told him what had occurred. This is the reason the Blessed One didn't allow him to go. But he didn't follow. Okay. Then the mediator, the blessed one, all what had occurred. Then the blessed one said, if Meghiya, the mind still lacks maturity for liberation, there are five conditions conducive to making it matured. What five? Number one, Meghiya. The first thing, Meghiya, for making the immature mind mature for liberation is to have a noble friend. Karyana Mitta. To have a noble friend, a noble companion, a noble associate. If you have a noble friend, a noble teacher, noble companion, if you associate with the noble one, then it can make your immature mind to become mature for liberation. And this is very, very important, especially in the teaching of the Buddha. Buddha says, the chief external support for the cultivation of noble eightfold path is this noble friend. External support. The external support helps you to cultivate the noble eightfold path is noble friend, noble associate or noble companion, or your teacher, your noble teacher. Okay. And one day, how it is important. One day, the Venerable Ananda, he taught himself. He said, "This for a success for this spiritual life, the noble friend plays 50% of the holy life." So then he think, "Am I right? Why not I go and ask the Blessed One?" So he approached the Blessed One, say what he think, what he has taught. Then the Blessed One told him, "No, Ananda, you are wrong. For the holy life, the noble friend, noble companion, play 100%, not 50%. If you heard, then the Blessed One say, if you have a noble friend, a noble companion, you are bound to success. Of course, your effort also important. If you have the noble friend, noble teacher, but you never try, then you will never success. So it's very important. If you want to be successful in your spiritual path, you must have noble friend, noble teacher, noble companion, or noble association. So how what are the quality a noble friend should have? There are few qualities they should have. Number one, he should endow with loving kindness. He must have love for all sentient beings. Number two, he must be a virtuous person. He keep his vinaya strictly. Number three, he must have wide learning, all the knowledge. If he is a monk, he must know all the Vinaya. We have three Tipitaka, Vinaya Pitaka, Sutta Pitaka, and Abhidhamma Pitaka. So he must have these three. He must have enough knowledge about these three Pitaka. Then he must also have practical experience. Learning knowledge not enough. You must have practical experience in order to guide the student in the meditation. And he also must have realization. Realization of the Dharma. Then he also must have enough effort, viriya. Then he must also endowed with patience. That's very important, patience. If somebody come and accuse or abuse the teacher, he must be able to endure all the abuse, not react with anger. So all this quality makes a person a noble friend. So you must choose based on this quality, then you associate with those you think is noble one, noble friend. Noble here doesn't mean that arahant, you know. Those who possess all this quality can become your noble friend. Okay. So if you have the noble friend, then our immature mind will become matured for liberation. Okay. Number two, there are five conditions. Number one, we have finished number one. Number two, further, Mekiya, a monk should be virtuous. His life should be displayed by the codes of his monastic rules. His conduct should be proper, and also his resort. His resort means the place he stays must be suitable. Then, seeing danger in the slightest fault, he should train himself in the rules he has accepted. This is the second condition, making the immature mind matured for liberation. Although this is for monks, but for lay person, also applicable for lay person. It means that you must be virtuous in three ways. Your body action, your bodily action must be virtuous, your verbal actions and your mental actions must be virtuous. Your mental action free from covetousness, free from anger, free from violence, free from jealousy, free from conceit, and free from stubborn hypocrisy, and so on. Make yourself virtuous, so that your mind, if you become virtuous, then your immature mind will become mature. Okay. Number third, further, Mekiya, the talk in which a monk engages should be fit and monk's life and be helpful to mental clarity. That is to say, it should be a talk on, number one, wanting little. It means you must engage in certain beneficial talk. What are the talk beneficial for you? Number one, wanting little. So you talk about wanting little, not wanting more and more. For example, you have small house. You say you want a small house. You have enough. For example, for monks and nuns, we have four requisites. We have only robes, medicine, food, and lodging. These are our four requisites. So we only have this, we only need this for enough. So one thing little. But as a lay person, you also should try to cultivate this good quality. If you have small house, enough. Don't think of the big one. If you have a small car, enough. Don't think the bigger car. If your wishes, if you want more and more, then your craving increases more and more. And this craving is the cause of suffering. The second noble truth. Craving is the cause for all suffering. So you must talk. Your talk must deal with wanting little, not wanting more and more. Okay? The second one, contentment. You must have contentment. Contentment is the greatest wealth, Buddha say. If you are contented, then you become the richest person in the world. If you are not contented, even though you have billions of dollars, you are not the richest one. So once you become contented, you become the richest person. And this contentment also refers to whatever achievement you have, you are contented. You don't want to boost your achievement to others. For example, you are very rich. You never boost your rich to others. You are contented. And for example, your meditation is very good. You never tell other people how good is my meditation. So this is also considered contentment. Conceal your achievement. Don't show off your achievement. Okay, this is also called contentment. Okay, the next one on solitude. You must engage in talk. Talk about the solitude, not association. Today I go to this party, associate with certain person. I want to associate with this and that. No. If you talk about the association, then your immature mind will never become mature. You must talk about the solitude. Stay alone. Strive hard in the meditation. This is called solitude. Okay, the next one. On seclusion. Seclusion is referred to mental seclusion and body seclusion. When you sit there, secluded yourself from external world. Okay. Then on application of energy. If we engage talk in application of energy, how to put forth energy, how to strive harder, how not to become lazy. If we can talk about the energy more and more, then we are bound to success. There are three types of energy. Number one, energy, the first is called the energy of arousal. Before you come to meditation, you start the first energy of arousal. So you come here and meditate. But this is not the end of it. The second energy, the energy of persistence. Once you start, you need to go on constantly, persistent, perseverance. Don't give up. Now this is the middle energy. And the third, the last one, the energy of exertion. You exert the utmost effort to achieve your goal. I'll give you a story of Buddha's time. There was a wealthy son from a wealthy man. One day, he came to listen to Dhamma talk, and he was so inspired. And immediately, he was so inspired, and he feel disenchanted with the worldly life. So he decided to become monk. Then, after became monk, he went into a forest and tried hard in his meditation. And one day, a robber came to his house, to his kuti, wanting to kill him. Then he was very surprised. You know, I'm a monk. I have no property. Why you want to kill me? Then he said, this robber told him, your sister-in-law asked me to kill you. He said, why? Because you have your house, you have plenty of wealth. You know, your sister-in-law afraid. If you disrobe, came back to home, then share the property. So better your sister-in-law ask me to kill you first. Then he told the robber, okay, can you give me one more night? Give me one more night. Then next day you can kill me. If you can give me one more, spare me one more night. And the robber say, how can? You will run away. You know? Okay, then he took a big stone, and broke both of his knees. Then he said, now I cannot run away. Can you spare me one more night? Okay, the robber is also, you know, so touched by his determination. So, okay, I spare you one more night. And this monk, he think of himself, you know. He said, it's very shameful for me to die as a worldly person. as a worldly one, without achieving any sainthood. I don't want to die as an ordinary person. Tonight, I'm going to strive until I reach Arahantship, because I feel so disgusted. I feel so shameful to die as an ordinary person. So taking his pain, because he broke both of his knees, is so painful. So taking his pain as meditation object, he strived very hard until the next morning, and he achieved Arahantship. So if you feel pain during meditation, you think of this monk, okay? He broke both of his knees. How painful it is. Then you little bit pain, oh, cannot stand anymore. So you must listen to this type of story in order to arouse your energy. This is called application of energy. On application of energy, if you engage in such type of talk, it will make your immature mind mature for liberation. So what you talk is very important. If you talk only worry thing, today Halloween, let's go enjoy, after this we go and enjoy Halloween party, then no, such talk will not help you. So you must engage in beneficial talk, like talk one thing little, contentment, talk about application of energy, okay, on solitude, on seclusion. Then next on virtue, your five precepts, how to keep precept, not to break the precept. You talk about this. These are called beneficial talk. Then concentration. You also must talk about concentration. How to achieve first jhana? How to practice concentration? How to achieve first jhana? What is first jhana? What is second jhana? What's the benefit of concentration? You must engage in such type of talk in order to make the mind more mature. Okay. Then you must engage in talk on wisdom. Wisdom. What are the domain of wisdom? If you want to talk about wisdom, there are few domain you should discuss with. For example, element. Elements. You talk about element, four elements that can make your mind, your wisdom become sharper. Talk about the element. Talk about the aggregates, five aggregates. Talk about the six sense bases. Eye base, ear base, nose base, tongue base, body base, mind base. And talk about four noble truths. Then the last one, talk about dependent origination, cause and effect. So wisdom includes these five important subjects. Once again, talk about elements. When you talk about elements, for example, the body is composed of four elements, then your perception of self will disappear. And it helps your wisdom to become mature. Okay? And if you talk about the five aggregates, then you understand five aggregates is the noble truth of suffering. And this body, mind and body, is only conventional truth. What actually exists is five aggregates. So you understand better. You will not cling to the personality. Okay, then you talk about the six sense bases, because all refinements come through the six sense bases. All the greed, hatred and delusion either come from the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or from the mind. So it's also important to understand six sense bases. Then you talk about four noble truths. The main teaching of the Buddha is four noble truths. Buddha said, you and I, he said, you and I have to go around this cycle of birth and death. Why? Because not penetrating the Four Noble Truths. Because of not penetrating the Four Noble Truths, you and I have to go around the cycle of birth and death. So in order to reach the end of the samsara, we have to understand Four Noble Truths. Okay. Then the last one, we talk about dependent origination. Everything depends on cause and effect. So if we keep on talking about dependent origination, we understand everything arises due to causes. So there's not a self. Now, everything arises, pass away due to cause and condition. So our sense of self will become less and less. So all these thoughts are beneficial for our mind to become more and more mature. Then talk about the deliverance and liberation. And liberation from all the suffering and liberation from the realm of rebirth. Okay. So if a monk has easily, without difficulty, opportunity for such talk, this is the third condition making the immature mind mature for liberation. Okay. Number four. Further, Megiya, a monk lives with his energy set upon the abandoning of everything harmful and the acquiring of everything beneficial. He is steadfast and firm in his efforts, not shirking the task as to cultivating things beneficial. This is the fourth condition for making the immature mind mature for liberation. Number four is live with the energy set upon the abandoning of everything harmful. Everything harmful comes from the three doors: body, verbal, and mind. So everything harmful comes from the body. For example, what are the harmful things come from the body? Killing, sexual misconduct, stealing. And anything harmful from the verbal, slandering, harsh speech, lying, and frivolous talk, useless talk. So you must abandon. You must have energy to abandon it, not to indulge in it. And anything harmful comes from the mind. For example, our covetousness, our greed, our jealousy, our stubborn, hypocrisy, then sleepiness, restlessness, skeptical doubt, ill will, and so on. Anything harmful come from the mind, you must have enough energy to abandon it. Now, this is an admonishment from the Buddha. If you engage in it, if you entertain it, then the defilement take the upper hand of you, and we become the slave of our defilements. So first, abandon. You must have enough energy to abandon everything harmful, and acquiring of everything beneficial, whatever good. For example, sila, samadhi, panya, morality, concentration and wisdom, charity, morality, concentration and wisdom, all are beneficial. Then you must have enough energy to acquire all these good things. And the last one, further Megiya. A monk possesses wisdom. He is equipped with the wisdom that perceives the rise and fall of conditioned things, which is noble and penetrating and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. The last factor, the last condition, he must possess the insight knowledge of seeing, arising and passing away. We call Udaya Baya Jnana. The knowledge, the inside knowledge of arising and passing away. He must have this inside knowledge. And this inside knowledge is very penetrating and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. And this is the fifth thing making the immature mind mature for liberation. Of a monk, Meghiya, who has a noble friend, a noble companion and associate, it can be expected that he will be virtuous, that he will engage in talks befitting the monk's life and helpful to mental clarity, that his energy will be set upon the abandoning of everything harmful and the acquiring of everything beneficial, that he will be equipped with the wisdom that leads to the complete destruction of suffering. So from this paragraph, what Buddha wants to say is that when you have the noble friend, the most important one, then the other fourth will come to fulfillment. When you have a noble friend, you follow your noble friend's behavior, then you become a virtuous person. Because your noble friend never break the Vinaya, never break the precepts, and you also imitate, you emulate him, and you yourself become a virtuous person. And with the association with the noble one, the noble friend will tell you one thing later, will tell you how to live in solitude, how to exert your energy, how to improve your concentration, how to perceive conditional things as impermanent, as suffering, as non-self. And also, with the association with the noble one, then you have enough energy, you will have energy to abandon all everything harmful and gain everything beneficial. And finally, you will become equipped with the wisdom, seeing, arising and passing away of all conditional phenomena. I give you an example, how will this happen? Venerable Anuruddha is foremost in divine eyes. His divine eyes can see a thousandfold system away. Not only this world, another world. He can see. So one day, when he was meditating, then he thought to himself. He said that, my divine ear can see thousand systems far away. And my energy is firm. My mindfulness is alert. My body is tranquil and my concentration is very good. But I still cannot reach arahantship. So he was very unhappy and he was bothered about this one. Then he think, who should I ask? Who should I approach? Who can help me? So at this point, noble friend is very important. We need the help from noble friend. So he approached Venerable Sariputta. Venerable Sariputta. Then the Venerable Sariputta told him, he said, Anuruddha, you think your divine eye can see thousand systems far away. This is your conceit. And you think your energy is very firm. Your mindfulness is alert and your body is tranquil and your concentration is good. There is restlessness. When you think like that, you are not meditating anymore. Oh, my energy is very good. My mindfulness is so good. My body is so tranquil. You are thinking, you are not meditating anymore. So this is restlessness, they told him. Then you think that, although my concentration so good, my mindfulness so good, I still cannot achieve arahantship. This is your worry. You worried. Then Venerable Sariputta told him, you must abandon, put aside all these things. Don't pay attention to all these things, but direct your mind. Incline your mind. Direct your mind towards deathless element. Deathless element means Nibbana. Direct your mind towards Nibbana. Then everything will be okay. So Anuruddha followed this noble friend's instruction and meditate and become Arahant. So this is the importance of noble friend. And also important to be obedient. To be follow closely what the teacher say. Then you make very fast progress. But if you think you are smarter than friend, you are smarter than the teacher, then no teacher can help you. Okay? Okay. So then, Mekiya. When the monk is firmly grounded in these five things, he should cultivate another four things. He should cultivate the reflection on the impurity of the body, mean 32 parts, for abandoning lust. Because for monks and nuns, we usually go arms round. We go outside for arms round. So very easy, we come across. Sometimes those who, for example, a monk, taking the bowl for arms round. There are so many beautiful women want to offer the food. There's so many full of beautiful women, and they dress very properly because they think to offer food to the monks and nuns, they must wear very properly. So there are so many beautiful women waiting to offer the food. If the monks do not practice this impurity of the body, then very easy the lust will arise when I come to contact with a beautiful woman. So it's a compulsory for a monk and nun to practice this 32 parts impurity of the body, to abandon the lust. So how to practice? I think for layperson also, it's necessary to practice, especially for those who have wife and husband already. So sometimes you meet with another more handsome than your husband or more beautiful than your wife, your mind start to shake. So at this time you should practice 32 parts of the body. How to practice? First, you must learn by heart first the name of this 32. When you free at home, you just learn head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. You learn it divided into six groups. You learn the first group first. Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. So when you contemplate head hair, you keep the attention here. Head hair. Then you contemplate, you reflect the impurity of the head hair. When the hair on top of the head, it looks very nice. If you take out one, take out and put in your porridge, and it becomes so repulsive. It becomes so repulsive. So if your husband praise your hair, very beautiful, you pick up one and offer to him. He may not like it anymore. So it's when it's on top of the head, it looks nice, but if it come out from the head, it doesn't look nice. So you contemplate now the impurity of the hair, or you wait 10 days, don't wash your hair. Then the smell will start to come. Not say 10 days, 3 days, don't wash your hair. If you have concentration, you will know how smelly is the smell come out from the hair. Then you contemplate, you remember that bad smell. Remember that, then contemplate, head hair is impure, head hair is impure. Then you move to head hair, body hair also. Then nail also. Tea also very repulsive. That's why the first thing we have to do when we wake up early in the morning, the first thing we do is to brush tea. Because we also cannot stand our own smell. So you can reflect, no? When you do not brush your teeth, you know, how smell is your teeth? Then you remember that, no? Then you keep your attention on the teeth, then you reflect the repulsiveness, the impure nature of the teeth. No? Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, and your skin also, one by one. Then go up to the last one, urine. You must learn all the 32 parts. And then the last one, urine. Then easily you can have, easily you can develop this perception of impurity of the body. Internally and externally. You do the internally first, then you extend up to the external one. So whoever sits beside you, or whoever you fall in love with, then you just pay attention to their impurity of the 32 part. Then helps you to abandon the last. Okay. The next one, the Meghiya. When a monk is firmly grounded in these five things, he should cultivate another four things. He should cultivate the reflection on the impurity of the body for abandoning last. He should cultivate loving kindness for abandoning aversion. So loving kindness and impurity of the body, we call two of the protective meditation. We have four protective meditation. Number one is recollecting the virtues of the Buddha. Number two, recollecting the impurity of the body. Number three, loving kindness. Number four, death contemplation. These four we call protective because it protects us. Okay, so loving kindness is very easy. First, we radiate loving kindness to ourselves first. About 10 minutes, may I be well and happy, may I be well and happy. Then you change to a respectable teacher, a respectable friend or teacher, but he or she must be same sex and still alive, not a dead person. Then you radiate loving kindness to him or her. May he be well and happy. May he be well and happy until you achieve jhana. Then after that, you move to another person, neutral person. Whom you do not like and you do not hate. Then you send loving kindness to him until you're successful. Then after that, you move to enemy. This enemy doesn't mean that you hate very much. Though some people, they don't have enemy at all. So, but some people, someone still don't like him. For example, let's say I don't have enemy, but certain person still don't like me. So I can take this person as an enemy and radiate loving kindness to him. Then after if you are successful in radiating loving kindness to enemy, then you must balance your loving kindness. So your loving kindness to these four types of person, number one, oneself, number two, a respectable person, number three, neutral person. Number four, enemy. Your loving kindness to these four types of person must be balanced. You cannot say, respectable, I send loving kindness more. Enemy, I send less because I don't like him. If you can see your loving kindness, the imbalance of your loving kindness, then your loving kindness is not successful yet. You must train yourself up to your loving kindness must be balanced to all beings. Okay. Then Then, okay, after that, he should cultivate mindfulness of breathing for cutting off distracting thoughts, like we have practiced now. The purpose of this one to cut off the distracting thoughts. Because when the mind is restless, then you cannot see things as they really are. Only your mind is calm, peaceful, then you can see things as they really are. And the last one, he should cultivate the perception of impermanence for eliminating the conceit I am. In him who perceives impermanence, the perception of egolessness becomes firmly established. And he who perceives egolessness attains to the elimination of the conceit I am. And in this very life, he reaches Nirvana. So, the last four, recollecting on the impurity of the body, then the second one, loving kindness, and the third one, mindfulness of breathing. All these three are samatha meditation. And the last one, contemplate the impermanence, is vipassana meditation. That's why it's important to start with concentration first. Then you go to the vipassana. That's why now, yesterday I shared with you how to contemplate impermanence. Now, whatever arises in your mind and body, you just mentally note impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Whether you see it arising and passing away or not, in the beginning, not so important. You must make a habit to note first, to mark first, impermanent, impermanent. When your concentration and mindfulness become strong, then you will really see the fast arising and passing away. Only then, the conceit, only then you can remove the conceit, I am. I am so and so. I am superior. I am so and so. I am doctor. I am engineer. I am so and so. These are all conceit. So by contemplating impermanent, now I am so and so. Next life, I become hell beings. No more so and so. So this way, if you contemplate impermanence, you will not attach to you are so and so. So it's important to contemplate impermanence. Everything now I'm so and so also cause and effect. Next life, who knows? You know, like Bodhisattva, many lifetimes. He was a king of king's son. But also many lifetimes, he was cast into hell. He became the low caste. He became the low caste and can become very, very ugly. So nothing is permanent. So if we can contemplate impermanent, impermanent, we will not cling to I am so and so. We also will not cling to our property. We will not cling to whatever we have. So it's very important to contemplate this impermanence. And by contemplate this impermanence, gradually you reach a stage we call Udaya Vayanyana, arising and passing away, arising and passing away of all formations. These are the important stages. For those who want to reach Nibbana, he must experience this arising and passing away. This is mentioned many, many times in the sutta. If you aim to see Nibbana, you must have this experience in order to see Nibbana. If you have not yet reached this experience, you have to strive to reach that stage in order to reach the Nibbana. We call Udaya Vayanyana, arising and passing away. Not arising now, after 10 minutes passing away. Not like that. Very fast. Arising, passing, very, very fast. You cannot note anymore. You cannot mark anymore. You just know arising and passing away very fast. Okay. So, this is the end of this sutta. So, This sutta is from Anguttara Nikaya. So there are five things. First, you must have noble friend. Second, you must be virtuous. Third, you must engage in beneficial talk. Fourth, you must have energy to abandon all are harmful and acquire all are beneficial. And the last one, you must have wisdom to reach the stage of arising and passing away. And after that, you must try 32 paths to see the impurity of the body, and you must cultivate loving kindness, you must cultivate mindfulness of breath, anapanasati, like what we have practiced today, and the third, you must cultivate impermanence of all formation to remove conceit, I am. Then finally you will reach Nirvana. Okay, this is the end of the talk. Any questions? Seclusion. Seclusion means almost like staying alone. Seclusion. Actually, seclusion means meditation. Your body become quiet, mind become quiet. It's called seclusion. Okay? No question?
One time a friend told me that practice the meditation can improve understanding of sutta.
Yes.
Is that true? Or
can improve the understanding of sutta?
Yeah.
Exactly, yes.
How is that related?
For example, when you see let's say you see arising and passing away through your practical experience, you know, you see all your feeling come from the context. You see all your feeling impermanent, practically. Then you read the sutta. And Buddha always say, feeling is impermanent, feeling is non-self, feeling is cause and effect, everything arising and passing away, sabbe sankhara anicca, all formations are impermanent. So what you have experienced is truly mentioned in the sutta. Then you have a lot of happiness, joy and happiness. But on the other hand, if you have enough sutta knowledge, also helps your meditation. It's also important to have knowledge, then meditate. Then you will know whether you are in the right path or in the wrong path. Any other questions? No? Okay, then let us share in.
I represent MLA and Yogi. I want to say something to you. Thank you for giving us such a nice teaching on Anapanasati, and we beg your pardon for any inconvenience or inconsideration that we might have done in this retreat, and also as a token of our appreciation to your teaching, we have prepared a dana, and please accept our dana. Thank you.
Well, any of you want to share your experience with others?
I have a minor question. Yesterday, you talked about simple procedures, very good procedures, about recognizing it, accepting it, investigating it, and identification. Are these in the commentary coming from, or from Bahasi or other teacher? Where is it from the commentary?
This one? The procedure I give? Yes, you mean where it comes from?
Yes. Is it coming from the commentary?
No. I think come from many sources. First, come from my own experience. Second, come from the Sutta. Thirdly, come from the some of the famous Theravada in Burma.
Yeah, I'm reading the Theravada. We talk about this very often.
Yes. I take all the good from others and combine together. Well, Sanat Maharshi good in mindfulness, but I think lacking something. So I take another, like, let's say Mogo Siyado. Mogo Siyado always ask us to contemplate impermanence. No? Then I take the one. So I take the good from all, then combine into one. Of course, I also practice accordingly.